everyone. This is Kimberly Christian. I am just coming in to let you know that we had a wonderful conversation with Anna Jones, who is a dietitian here in Tallahassee, Florida. And it was so wonderful that we decided to break it up into two episodes. So we had lots and lots of conversation, and we could have probably continued to talk for the rest of the day. But we all had clients, so we had to end our time. But we're actually going to split it up into two episodes. So what you're going to hear next is the first half of our conversation, and then we'll come back next week with the second half of our conversation. So just wanted to give you a heads up. It's going to be split up into two parts. But this is the first half of our conversation about what Anna does in our community. I'm really excited for y'all to hear this today. All right. So we are here with Anna Jones. We are so excited to have her on our podcast today. And we were just talking that this is our first interview with somebody outside of Trauma Healing Collective. So we're really honored to have her here today. So we're going to jump right in with some of our questions. And we're going to start with our first question, which is the question we ask all of our guests. And that is with your current role, and you'll tell us a little bit about what that is in a minute. And actually, why don't we start with that first? Why don't you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do, and then we'll jump into that question.
Yeah. Well, I'm so excited to be here. We were just saying before we hopped on that I'm a huge podcast listener. And so yes. I think it's a wonderful way to share information and learn. And so, yeah, I'm really excited to be here. So yeah, I'm Anna Jones. I'm a registered dietitian, nutritionist. And I'm a non-diet dietitian.
Yes.
So that I thought we would probably get into a little bit today, but so often people think dietitian, and it's interesting because diet is in the the title.
And
so they think, like, you know, like, she's going to put me on a diet, she's going to restrict everything. And that is the opposite of what I do. Actually, one of my favorite things is when people come see me and I'm able to tell them lots of things that they've been cutting out of what they've been eating that they can include, and just to see their faces light up. And So, non-diet, meaning I do not prescribe diets. Diets don't work. You know, that restriction actually results in all sorts of, well, what we'll talk about today, trauma. And, you know, really is damaging to people's minds, bodies. And so, I think just, I've been a dietitian for over 20 years. And so it's not that I've never been in that world of, like, okay, I'm a dietitian, like getting out of school, right? I worked in clinical setting. I worked in a hospital and long-term care. And then I got into private practice, and I thought my job was to do that, to help people. Really what my focus was like narrowing down all the numbers. And I remember early on in my private practice, like calculating numbers and calories and the things and all that. And it was so, like, icky to me. It didn't, it wasn't the way I ate. Like, I didn't calculate everything before I ate it. I didn't, you know, I remember people asking me, you know, should I buy a scale? And I'm like, God, no, like, please don't buy a scale, just eat, you know? And so, but it took me many years of doing this and coming into and learning about mindful eating, intuitive eating, and learning that, like, this, that sort of icky feeling I was feeling isn't just me, you know, that there is, like, that's all I knew is, like, okay, I'm a dietitian. I'm supposed to do the thing, the calculations and the, as I told you in my notes, I was kind of drinking the diet culture Kool-Aid, right? Like, I just thought, because it's all I had ever lived myself, right? Because we're surrounded by it constantly.
It's all that's out there for so long.
Yeah. And then in my education, that's what I had learned, right? Along with lots of science and physiology and all this wonderful information about how the body functions, but ultimately, I think because of, you know, just culturally, what we all believe and is ingrained in us so much is this belief that food is to be sort of controlled and figured out and calculated. I mean, you look around and that's the message that we're sold, right? And so I thought, again, I thought my job was to do that. And I was really to a point where I was like, all right, if this is what being a dietitian is, like, I can't do this anymore. It was, was just so far removed from my values. Like I said, how I thought about food. I grew up with grandmothers who were Southern grandmothers who were wonderful cooks. Yeah. My mom was a wonderful, you know, is a wonderful cook. And I loved food and movement and all these things. And I didn't want to break it down into calculations. Like I really wanted to help people enjoy food too, you know? Yeah. And so in finding mindful eating, intuitive eating, that's what kind of led me to know that, oh, there's this whole other way of teaching about food and bodies and helping people heal their relationship, which even that thought I feel like can be a little odd to think about being in relationship with both food and our bodies and even movement. Yes. We really have a relationship with movement too. And so it was just a lot of unlearning for me, a lot of learning through this process of, you know, becoming a certified intuitive eating counselor. And that was just sort of the beginning of it. And then I'm just continuously learning and in talking with people, you know, how to just be there in their sort of story with them. So that was a long-winded sort of answer.
I love it.
Oh, it's amazing.
And I have like so many follow-up questions from that.
Me too.
I'm going to go back to the original question first and let you answer that and see if it answers any of the questions that are popping off in my head. But then I have so many follow-up questions.
Yeah.
But our kind of question that we ask everybody is, in your current role, how do you work to destigmatize trauma?
Yeah. So Kim, when I heard you on, when you did the podcast, I was listening and I thought, oh God, like, I was like, oh, how would I answer that? Right. And so I really reflected on how do I, and then all of a sudden I thought, oh God, you know, gosh, I was kind of freaked out. And then I thought, no, this is completely what I do. And so it's funny.
Yes, like, you do.
Me, a lot of times I take words and I like have to go look them up. Like, what does destigmatize mean? And it means taking away the shame of,
Yes.
And so that is completely the shift that my work has made is absolutely. Not just prescribing and being like this expert, but instead helping people to take the shame out of not only food, right? But just being in a body. Like, there's so much shame and trauma around just simply nourishing ourselves and and existing in our bodies, right? And even more so, the more marginalized and the more removed you are from you know, what the cultural ideal is. But it really impacts all of us in all different body shapes, sizes, weights, right? And so I think very much that's what I'm doing is sort of taking away that shame and being a voice of reason to kind of bring awareness to, like, the Kool-Aid, right? What we've all been sort of learning and entrenched in for our entire lives that we don't even know is there because it's all we've ever known.
It's just all we've known. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, did you always want to be a dietitian? Is this something that you felt when you were kind of going into your career, or did you come into it after doing something else?
Yeah. So, I had a little trouble figuring out my major in college. Yeah. So I tried a couple. I was an art major.
I'm sure nobody can relate to that.
No, not at all.
Yeah. I struggled a little bit. So I was an art major for a semester. It was probably one of the hardest semesters I've ever had. I was at FSU and I had, you know, some artistic ability, but not not enough to be, for it to be my major. So that semester was that semester. And then I moved on, and then I tried communication for a day. And I remember going into the big FSU auditorium classroom of, like, you know, hundreds of people. And they talked about having to do, like, presentations. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I'm not going to be a communications major, because mm-hmm. I've come a long way in public speaking.
Look at you.
doing a podcast.
Oh my gosh. Like, back then, I mean, it would just strike absolute fear. You know, yeah. It's amazing how, you know, just with maturity and also speaking about things that you're passionate about, you know, kind of goes away. But anyway, mm-hmm. So that was that one day as a communications major. And then I went to my advisor. I'm like, I'm lost. I don't know. And so that advisor suggested nutrition. I looked at the curriculum and I thought, oh boy, because it's not an easy road. Lots of science and math and mm-hmm. all the things. I had always, like I said, loved food. I grew up in houses, you know, with grandmothers who cooked and my mom cooked. Yeah. And I love to cook. And so that, and plus I've always been active and I danced and, you know, grew up in that world. Oh, so it just kind of led me into that, but it was a bit of a journey to get there.
Yeah.
But I'm so grateful now after, you know, doing this. And then, like I said, discovering intuitive eating, mindful eating, that I've mm-hmm. come to this place where I am settled and just loving what I do. So.
Well, that actually brings me, I first wanted to say kind of a follow-up to your other answer, is that how you and I met, which is so funny because we actually just met in person for the first time at our open house a couple weekends ago. But we have been referring clients back and forth to each other for a while now. And I just, that piece about destigmatization and it being, you know, getting rid of the shame around it, I can say that you have successfully done that with several of the clients that we've shared. And that's why I was like, you have to come be on our podcast, because it has just been life-changing for the clients that we've shared. And so I know that you're doing that amazing work with other people. And it's just so empowering to see the shifts for people who are, you know, working on their trauma with me, working on their stuff with food with you, and just really getting past that shame. It's so beautiful. And it, you know, I'm getting chills because I just love to see that. And so I'm really grateful for you. I'm so grateful that we have you in our community. And so my kind of follow-up, because you've mentioned it a couple times, and I know that for me, the first time I heard these things, it was like a foreign language. And so I'm wondering if you can say a little bit more about what mindful eating and intuitive eating is for our listeners who maybe are like me the first time I heard those and are like, what does that even mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah, I think all of this, like it is like a foreign language. Like it is, mm-hmm. And I try to break it down into it being as sort of real life and practical as possible, because it all, like I said, like we are so entrenched in the way we've always believed about food mm-hmm. and bodies, and that it can seem so absolutely foreign, like that it's unreachable, right? This idea, like I talk about, you know, I help people find peace with food and freedom, right? Even that just seems like, what? Like, is that even possible when we, you know, when
are we allowed?
Right? Absolutely. Right?
We need permission?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. That's such a wonderful point, that word right there, permission.
Permission.
That's so much of the work that I do with people is just allowing them to just be in their bodies, just eat, just pay attention to their body's signals, right? And so, getting mm-hmm. getting back to your question. So mindful eating and intuitive eating are intertwined, right? They're not the mm-hmm. same thing. Mindful eating, if, you know, I've learned so much about mindfulness. But if you think about mindful eating, it's really just having intention and attention in not just food, but how your body feels, right? And mm-hmm. so that's sort of a piece of intuitive eating. It's a big piece of intuitive eating. Yeah. Intuitive eating was created by two dietitians 25 years ago or so. And so it's been around a long time, even though it's kind of growing in popularity, which I love.
Yes.
But so created by two dietitians, basically a similar story. Like I've listened to them so much on podcasts and they kind of are like banging their heads up against a wall, like doing the thing they thought dietitians, you know, quote unquote, should be doing. Mm-hmm. And they created this framework. It's based on 10 principles. And it's really about moving away from this diet focused, weight focused mindset. Mm-hmm. And coming back into the body and learning to pay attention to the body signals. There's a principle on hunger. There's a principle on fullness. There's a principle on satisfaction, right? Talking about permission. I mean, just the idea of satisfaction around food is being satisfied, not only thinking of food as this thing to restrict or push away or ignore, right? And same with our body's signals, right? We tend to like, I've had so many conversations with people around hunger and thinking it's a bad thing and that we shouldn't pay attention to it. When the cool thing, I think,
survival.
Yes.
Like you're free to eat, right?
Yes. And I love the like the analogy or whatever, like I've seen this so many times, like when we have to pee, we don't like question ourselves. Like we don't like ask a thousand things about, oh, but I just peed. Should I have to pee again? And like, you know, like, but with hunger, it has become so like, I don't know, confusing, right? Jacked up that we can't just simply listen and respond. And the more we do that, right, the more we're disconnected from the body and don't respond, the more that cycle just kind of feeds into itself, right? And the thing I think that really sold, well, a couple of things, I think intuitive eating, like we are born intuitive eaters, right? It's not something that Evelyn and Elise, the two creators, just came up with out of the blue. There's tons of research that supports that this is our natural, innate way of being. This is the way we are. If you think about a toddler, right? They don't question everything around food or their body signals. Mm-hmm. They eat when they're hungry. They stop when they're full. They eat what's satisfying to them. They'll, you know, shake their head and move away if they don't want something, right? They move. Movement is another principle of intuitive eating. They move their bodies in ways they enjoy. They're not tracking everything on a watch and like, right? Yeah. They're just living life, being in a body and nourishing themselves. And so that to me, those two sort of points, all the research that's behind intuitive eating and this non-diet approach, and this concept that it's the way we're born. It is. And so we all have the capability to come back to this way of being. So as foreign as it seems, because we've all sort of moved so far beyond, you know, just simply listening to our body and responding and caring for ourselves, right? It is possible. It's not easy work.
No.
I mean, it is, it's hard and it has its ups and downs, right? And so like you telling me that, you know, you talking to your clients that you referred that it's made a positive impact is just like my favorite thing to hear.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Because it's hard work. And so some people,
it's so hard.
Yeah. Can do the work and stick with it. Some people have to let it sit for a little bit. I think a big sort of misconception is that like you read the book, like there's an intuitive eating book. We'll talk about books later, but, that you read the book and you're healed. Right. But it doesn't work.
That's like
that.
Us. Scratching the surface. Right.
It's just an introduction, right? To these this foreign language that we then have to live and practice and you know, be in order to understand. And be able to trust our bodies, right? That's a huge
trust
part of it too.
Well, and I think I mentioned this to you at the open house, but what I found in doing this work myself and in working with the clients that I work with, and, you know, Shay is our body person, right? And so this idea of becoming more embodied and getting in tune with our body, what I found in working with my clients is that this is the first way, especially for women, certainly men too, but especially for women, this is one of the first ways that we are taught to disconnect from our bodies. Don't listen to your body when it's hungry. Don't listen, you know, when your body's craving something, like shut that off, like forget about it. And that from a very young age, I think I mentioned in my interview with third grade, right? Like from such a young age, we are taught to stop trusting our bodies, which then leads to all kinds of other potential dangers for trauma to enter in. And so this ability to reconnect to our bodies in such a, like you said, such a survival, you know, like hunger is a literal survival thing, right? To be able to reconnect with that part of our bodies and to start trusting our bodies in that way starts to lead to such a sense of ability to trust ourselves in other ways. And it's created so much healing for so many of my clients that I can't talk about this enough. So I'm so glad that you're here today.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I sometimes, like, especially early on when I start working with clients, I try to describe that this is not just about food. You know, that it's so much bigger. And I've seen it with clients who stick with this work and continue the healing process, that the more you can begin to trust your body and, you know, have this, you know, peaceful relationship with food, movement, with self-care, then it trickles into all aspects of people's lives. And it's the coolest thing to be able to witness, you know, but to be able to describe that, I always feel like kind of like a used car salesman or something, like I'm trying to, you know, or this like I'm the prophet come to, and it's like, it's so hard to describe.
You're but like, it, I'm not making it up. I promise. No.
Yeah. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing. So,
yeah.
Thank you everyone for tuning in to listen to that first part of our conversation with Anna Jones. Like I said, she'll be back next week for the second half of that conversation. So I hope that you'll all tune in again to listen to the just amazing information and insight that she has. Just so wonderful to hear somebody who's an expert in their field kind of talk about the things that Jay and I harp on all the time, but it's nice to hear somebody who's an actual expert in this field talk about it. So hope that you'll join us back next week to hear the second part of that conversation. And thank you all so much for listening. Bye-bye. Bye.